closely around a wall. He heard Findley sigh. There was the familiar sound of moving steel, followed by a small, organic sort of noise and a cough. Vimes reached down for his sword. But it was up on the road, too, wasn't it? Down here, the song in his head came back louder, with the background clink of metal that was always part of it. See how they rise up, rise up, rise up. He shook his head as if that had dislodged the memory. He had to concentrate. Vimes ran into the room and made a leap. It seemed to him that he stayed in the air a long time. There was the torturer, blood on his shirt. There was Swing, just sliding the blade back into the stick. And Vimes, airborne, armed with just a knife. I'm going to get out of this, he thought. I know, because I remember this. I remember Keel coming out and saying it was all over. But that was the real Keel. This is me. It doesn't have to happen the same way. Swing jerked aside with surprising speed, trying to tug the blade out again. Vimes hit the sacks on the wall and had the sense to roll away immediately. The blade slashed down beside him, spilling straw onto the floor. He'd expected Swing to be a bad swordsman. That ridiculous stick suggested it. But he was a street swordsman. No finesse, no fancy moves, just some talent at moving the blade quickly and sticking it where you hoped it wasn't going to go. Fire crackled in the corner of the ceiling. Dripping spirit or sheer heat had worked itself through the heavy floorboards. A couple of the sacks began to blossom thick white smoke, which rolled above the men in a spreading cloud. He circled the chair, watching Swing intently.
"I believe you are making a grave mistake," said Swing.
Vimes concentrated on avoiding the sword.
"Hard times demand hard measures. Every leader knows that," said Swing.
Vimes dodged, but continued circling, knife at the ready.
"History needs its butchers as well as its shepherds, Sergeant."
Swing jabbed, but Vimes had been watching his eyes and swayed away in time. The man wasn't pleading. He didn't understand what had been done to require it. But he could see Vimes's face. There was no emotion in it at all.
"You must understand that in times of national emergency we cannot be too concerned with the so-called rights of..."
Vimes darted sideways and along the haze-filled corridor to the office. Swing lurched after him. The blade sliced Vimes on the back of the leg. He sprawled onto the clerk's desk. Swing circled to find a stabbing point. He drew back the sword. Vimes's hand came up holding the steel ruler. The smack of its flat steel against the blade knocked it right out of the captain's grasp. Vimes pulled himself upright as though in a dream, following on the curve of the stroke. "Send it back into the dark until you need it." He turned the ruler as the backstroke began, and it whispered through the air, edge first, leaving the hazy smoke rolling and coiling behind it. The tip caught Swing across the neck. Behind Vimes, the white smoke tumbled out of the corridor. The ceiling of the bloody chamber was falling in. But he stayed, watching Swing with the same blank, intent expression. The man had raised his hands to his throat, blood spurting from between his fingers. He rocked, gasping for a breath that couldn't come, and fell backwards. Vimes tossed the ruler on top of him and limped away. Outside, there was the thunder of moving barricades. Swing opened his eyes. The world around him was grey, except for the black-clad figure in front of him. He sought, as he always did, to learn more about the new person by carefully examining their features.
Your eyes are... your nose is... your chin...
He gave up.
"Yes," said Death. "I'm a bit of a tricky one. This way, Mr. Swing."
Lord Winder was, thought Vetinari, impressively paranoid. He'd even put a guard on the top of the whisky distillery that overlooked the palace grounds. Two guards, in fact. One of them was clearly visible as you rose over the parapet, but the other was lurking in the shadows by the chimneys. The late Honourable John Bleedwell had spotted only the first one. Vetinari watched impassively as the young man was dragged away. If you were an assassin, being killed in the pursuit of your craft was all part of the job, albeit the last part. You couldn't complain. And it meant that there was only one guard now, the other one taking Bleedwell, who had lived up to his name, downstairs. Bleedwell had worn black. Assassins always did. Black was cool, and besides, it was the rules. But only in a dark cellar at midnight was black a sensible colour. Elsewhere, Vetinari preferred dark green or shades of dark grey. With the right colouring and the right stance, you vanished. People's eyes would help you vanish.